All right, welcome back. Deep inside the Death Star, I'm Larry Larson.
I'm Gov Maharaj.
And this is Defrag, where we answer all of your support questions. We got a lot today, and we got to start burning through these, so we're going to just churn through as fast as we can. First question, how do I make a USB thumb drive that has Windows install disk on it? Do I need to do anything special, and can I have 32-bit and 64-bit on one drive?
Okay,
it's a good one. I'll save you some time.
Multi-part question. Starting with Vista going forward, you can easily run your DVD from a USB stick. A couple of prep things that you got to do if you have your DVD, create an ISO from it. That's the first step. And then you need to get, ideally, this USB DVD download and prep tool.
So you have to have a disk that you can make an ISO out of.
Yes, you do.
Okay.
There are, if you're an MSDN subscriber, which I'm sure many of our viewers are, they can get ISOs from MSDN as well.
Yeah.
All you have to do is download this tool. It runs. It will tell you to plug in your USB stick. It'll format it and do everything that it needs to do. In general, I mean, this is just a nice, simple way of doing it.
Yeah.
You can do this yourself with the USB drive. You just create the partition, mark it as active, and you know that's basically all you got to do. Copy the ISO, expand it to the USB stick.
Now, if I crack open my Windows 7 box that I've bought at home, there's a 32-bit and a 64-bit disk in there.
Mm-hmm.
How do you have both on one?
So that one, what's interesting about the DVDs that come is if you just view the DVD itself, you'll notice that you know there are some files, and then there is a large compressed WIM file. Mm-hmm. That actually is the entire OS. It's an image of the OS. And within the WIM file is, you know, directives that say which edition that you're going to be installing. And it's based on the key that you enter. A helpful user actually out there has created an entire blog entry about this. This is Chris Control at What The. It's blogs.
What The.
He's apparently an avid user of Windows, or at least wants to express some tech tips, and we're more than willing to help give him a little bit more visibility.
Yeah, we'll give him some shout-outs here.
We'll post this link in the show notes, but this tells you how to create an all-in-one DVD or USB stick if you combine the two methods. I do this. I've got multiple images installed on a WIM, as well as a WinPE environment, a recovery environment, that allows me to do a bunch of troubleshooting and easily install Windows on machines. Because generally speaking, I like my install just because I'm biased. I use other people's keys, whatever they have available. You know, they bought the system, but
yeah.
I know my stuff is, you know, fully patched or whatever. This is also a great method to update the system with patches.
Yeah, and it's nice to have one disk that has all the SKUs and everything on it.
Exactly. It should be part of your toolkit. In any case, what he says is to download something called ImageX, and he's got just the tool itself as a download off of Dropbox. But what you'll probably really want to do, because you know all the tools are available from Microsoft, is actually get the tools itself from Microsoft, and you get that from the Windows Automated Installation Kit, or the WAKE. Again, we'll post the link for this as well. It is relatively large, but it allows you to completely customize your images.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is designed for enterprises, but pretty much most folks here will want to use this tool because they can create their custom images, custom unattends, which is, again, really cool.
Yeah.
If you know that, you know, you can create a set of images for your machines at home, and you can, you know, inject drivers, you can inject software on it, so that if you're rebuilding your machine constantly, or you know, you have multiple machines and you know that, hey, this image is for my one in the living room, this one is the one for my server, whatever, it makes deploying a heck of a lot easier.
Yeah.
If you download the WAKE, ImageX, ImageX comes with that, and this blog will tell you about how to crack open the install WIM, figure out, you know, which image you want to keep, and then combine images from the different DVDs.
Yeah.
into one WIM file, one Uber WIM file. So when you plug in your USB key or your new DVD, it'll tell you which one you can pick to install.
Yeah. Cool. All right. So there you have it. Next question. I heard that I can speed up my Windows 7 system by disabling System Restore. Does that really give me a perf benefit that's worth the risks?
Not particularly.
I seem to remember this from like XP days. This used to go around quite a bit. But System Restore, it's just putting in a restore point, right?
Yeah, so what it does is when the system detects an event, which is, you know, you're installing software, you're installing a new driver or whatever, it'll say, well, I'll do a restore point now just in case something goes wrong so the user can restore back.
And typically that will take a tenth of a second.
Yeah, it is a minuscule amount of time in order to do a system restore point.
Yeah. So I wouldn't do it.
No, probably, you know, the amount of time that it took to write the email is, you know, more time than actually doing the restore point.
For the year.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, then.
You can restore points do take up space, mm-hmm. and you can use the...
Do you know how much space a restore point takes?
It can vary.
Yeah.
But, you know, you can limit the amount of space that your drive is used with restore points.
And of course, that time varies on the machine and what's going on and everything else, you know.
Right. On a current machine with a fast hard drive, you know, it shouldn't matter. Even
it's not
a laptop,
noticeable.
It's not noticeable.
Yeah. Okay, good. All right. Is it possible to install Windows 7, Windows 2008, R2, in a folder named different from C Windows?
Short answer, no.
Yeah.
Long answer, no.
Yeah. So no, you can't. There you have it. Okay. Yeah, they wanted to install it in C WinNT for whatever reason. I guess you're just familiar with that. So.
Yeah, for numerous reasons, servicing reasons,
and you used to be able to do that in XP, but that changed at Vista.
Yeah. Well, it's how things are deployed now, right? It's because of the whole image format. It's actually the names of things are very intricate to Windows.
Yeah.
So there's not necessarily hard coding, but there are just assumptions that are made. And for simplicity, ease of use, ease of troubleshooting, we just decided that, hey, we're going to lock it down to Windows,
yeah.
And there's no real reason why it should ever be named anything else.
Yeah. I remember back in the day in XP, I actually had changed the Windows directory name on one install on my machine, and I regretted it almost every day after that until I finally flattened the machine. Because in the time you install software and it wants to put a driver in, you know, Windows System 32.
Yeah, exactly.
And stuff.
So, you know, it hard codes
there.
It hard codes it.
Yeah.
And a lot of software takes assumptions on it.
Yeah, don't do it anyway. But, all right. Next question. I have a Seton Infinity and I want to run it with Windows Media Center using Windows 2008 R2. Is this possible? That's the key question there.
You're trying to trick me, aren't you?
I'm trying to, yeah.
If all we are talking about is Server 2008 or Server 2008 R2 and nothing else, it is not possible.
Because there's...
no Media Center.
Yeah.
But one of the wonderful features of Server 2008 is hypervisor and,
yeah.
you know, virtual machines. So the Seton, for those of you that are unfamiliar with it, is this hardware device that can take a cable card. And when used with Media Center, you can, you know, decrypt channels. You can it works just the way that your cable box does.
Yeah.
And it's the Seton, the latest one, is a four tuner card.
Mm-hmm.
And really cool.
Will the Infinity let another machine that doesn't have the card in it use that card?
Yes.
Yeah.
But it works really rather well. The only stumbling block is going to be getting the drivers for the Seton. On Windows Server 2008.
Yeah.
It may or may not install because of the install package. I've personally not used Seton, so I can't be absolutely certain it'll work.
Yeah.
But, you know, if you can bypass all of its checks, or, you know, if you contact Seton themselves, they might have a Server 2008 version of the driver for you. You know, by all means, try it.
Mm-hmm.
There's another product that just got released recently called the HD Home Run Prime, which is a very similar device, but it is purely network-based. It doesn't actually connect to your machine in a physical sense.
Yeah.
In which case, you can run your VM of Win7 with Media Center on it, and it has the home run has no idea that it's running, talking to a VM.
Yeah.
So the only thing you have to worry about there is performance.
So the answer to the question is no. and maybe.
No and maybe. Well, definitely with the HD Home Run.
Yeah.
Because I've actually tried this.
Yeah.
And it does work.
That doesn't surprise me.
I had to see if it worked.
Yeah, of course.
Because, I mean, it could actually cut down on a machine, you know, if you're having a server box.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, if you have a really fast server box.
If you're running an IT department in your house anyway, which I'm sure you are, then that
right.
might save you a machine. Okay, next question. I've got a very old game on that I'm trying to install on Windows 7 64-bit, and I'm getting this error, which you have the error here you can show. I've tried setting it to run in XP compatibility mode, and I still got the error. Is there a way to force this to run in 32-bit mode or some other way to do it?
Unfortunately, this message that you're seeing is you're trying to run a 16-bit executable on Windows 64.
Mm-hmm.
That won't work because we don't have the 16-bit emulation in Windows 64-bit.
And there's the compatibility mode's not going to help here.
The compatibility mode is not going to help here, unfortunately.
But we're not going to leave him hanging like that.
No. In fact, most of the time, at least for things that I found where you're running 16-bit, well, let's see, what kind of machines were running 16-bit in the past? Really, really low-end, like pre-Pentium-style systems in a lot of cases, you know, 386s, 486s. So what you can do is run the XP mode,
mm-hmm.
and that's different from the compatibility layer. That's the virtual machine that is available for download.
And so even if you've got Windows 7, 64-bit, and you mm-hmm. fire up XP mode,
yes.
it's a 32-bit operating system.
It's a fully 32-bit operating system, which your 64-bit operating system is emulating.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can run your 16-bit application within the 32-bit XP mode.
Yeah.
So you've got 32-bit that's emulating 16-bit that is all being emulated by 64-bit.
So it's like a hall of mirrors to turn your expensive computer.
Or the Russian dolls.
Yeah. So you can do it, though.
Yes, you can do it.
Story.
Yeah, that is a perfectly viable method of running it. Or, of course, getting a 32-bit virtual machine, Windows 7.
Yeah.
You could do it there as well, but there's additional overhead of running Win 7 in a VM.
Yeah.
So XP mode is a little bit lighter.
Yeah, I use XP mode. I think I mentioned it before. I've got an old scanner that I really like mm-hmm. that won't run in, you know, Windows 7, so I use it for that. And I also used to use XP mode to run XCOM, the game, but now that they have it on Steam, I don't need to do that. But
well, it's nice that they brought that into the 21st century.
Yeah, it is nice. It'd be nicer if they actually made a new game, but we won't rat hole on that. All right, next question. How to regain USB disk folder permissions after switching to 7? I've upgraded my computer and installed Windows 7. Prior to that, I used XP or Windows XP SP3 and made some backups, and I can't change any of the files or folders because of ownership issues.
Mm-hmm.
To fix, I have to go into each one. When I group select folders and files, there's no security tab in the properties.
Mm-hmm.
Is there an easier way to do this?
Sure. So you know what happens when you plug in your USB drive and format it in XP? Because XP you're running as a full administrator, what happens is it assigns the ownership to the administrators group.
Yeah.
So I've sort of emulated that here. I've created a folder called test and another folder called foo. And if you take a look at the test folder and you take a look at the security tab and you go to advanced and then you go to owner, it'll tell you that the current owner is administrators.
Yeah.
So this is the ultimate problem that this user is having. He's taken the disk that had the ownership as administrators, brings it to Windows 7, plugs it in. Ownership is still administrators, but he is not an administrator from the sense of Explorer.
Yeah.
So what you really want to do at this point is go to the root of the drive and change your ownership to your actual user. You just choose that. You hit apply. It'll take ownership of everything and everything underneath it. So you'll want to choose that, replace owner on subcontainers.
Mm-hmm.
Hit okay. It'll change it, and then once that's done, you can go back in, and then, this is the second step that you have to do, you have to add yourself, even though you're the owner, you still have to add yourself as a user, and give yourself full rights. Once you do that, you'll be able to use it on your Win 7 machine, assuming that you've created a similar named user on your XP machine,
yeah.
Everything will just translate and you'll be able to edit your files without being prompted again in the future.
And if you pop that thumb drive out and then go stick it on another machine, do you have to do the same thing?
If you go to another machine where your user does not exist.
A different user.
Then you'd have to do the same thing. Or what you can do is, instead of assigning the ownership to you, you can assign it to the users group and then give users full rights to the drive.
Yeah.
And then at that point, it won't matter what user accesses it.
Okay, cool. Awesome. All right, next question. Here's the situation. He has a system image on a brand new 1 terabyte drive that he was able to capture before his primary drive went down. The issue is that Windows was having problems with updates and auto backups that were scheduled, and he's been trying to address those issues with his system while it was still working, but it hasn't worked. He's concerned that I was in fact having what I believe are likely registry-related issues before, and that they'll persist. After the recovery, is that correct? Do the registry issues that you've incurred persist after you've done a recovery?
It kind of depends on what the registry errors were. A system restore, if you're using a system restore, will undo certain registry corruptions,
mm-hmm.
you know, as taken to the last system point. But certain ones, it may not change. Like if it's if you're having a problem with user applications, it may not restore those.
Yeah.
So you're not guaranteed that you're going back to a point in time before the corruption, or the fact that it's even going to undo the corruption.
Mm-hmm.
Probably the best method is either a wipe and reload.
Yeah.
Or reinstall Windows over top of the existing install.
Mm-hmm.
In which case it will repair anything that was seemingly corrupted before.
But ultimately, there's no way to know until you've done this,
until
this
you've
restore.
Done it. Yep.
Yeah. All right. So sorry I didn't have a better answer on that, but that's what we have. Next question. On Windows 7, is there a command prompt line that can start CMD as an administrator? Apparently, there's such a command on Linux.
There is no built-in method from the command line to elevate that same command window.
Yeah.
And that is for, you know, obvious security reasons.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we don't want to be able to script an elevation.
Yeah.
What you can do is there's some PowerShell scripts, there's some batch files that have been created that use the scripting engine that you can emulate this, but you'll still get a prompt.
Mm-hmm.
But in general, if you're going to go into, if you're wanting to elevate your command window, just start it elevated first.
Yeah. Okay. All right. And also, I just wanted to mention, too, there's some interesting stuff that they're showing this week on Sanofsky's blog about building Windows 8. So you just definitely want to...
Is this the place that you're talking about?
Is that
about?
It? I think that's it. Yeah.
Is this the one?
So you definitely want to keep an eye on that. But there's some stuff on file management and other things, and they've got some interesting videos. So
the really cool thing, I mean, File Management Explorer, yeah, that's cool.
Yeah.
I mean, but I don't know about you. I spend most of my time in the command prompt.
Yeah.
But the thing that I found super cool is the work that they're doing with USB 3 support.
Yeah.
So I don't know if you know this, but Windows 7 didn't come with built-in USB 3 support because, well, we were developing it before USB 3 was ratified.
Sure.
So it's very difficult to build in a standard for something where the standard doesn't exist.
Yeah.
But we're building, for Windows 8, we're building native USB 3 support.
Yeah.
And the work that has gone into this is truly amazing.
Yeah.
I mean, the various teams that were involved in doing this, some super, super smart people, they're making it very robust and extremely fast.
I can't wait for that. This machine actually has USB 3, and I'm looking forward to moving on from Windows 7. It's nice, but you know, the native support I think will be better.
Well, it'll definitely, you don't have to worry about having to download a driver.
Yeah.
For most hardware, and yeah, the speed benefits are just unreal when everything matches up perfectly, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, obviously putting in a USB 2 external drive or USB stick,
mm-hmm.
you're not going to get any benefit from it.
Yeah.
But when you get like a nice USB stick that's based on USB 3 or USB 3 card
one.
Readers,
yeah.
It's gonna blow you away.
Awesome. Can't wait. Okay, so next question. My C drive is 20 gig large and almost full. How can I regain space? What are some of the things that people can do? I mean, a lot of times, and I have this problem with a couple machines at home. I've got some old tablet PCs and stuff, and it's just, it's not going to happen upgrading the drive. So what are the things that you can do to make sure that you're getting the maximum amount of free space on a very small drive?
Okay, so there are some things that you can do. Some are recommended, some are not. You can run the disk cleanup wizard. You can, if you run that elevated, it'll get rid of bunches of log files, and you know, if you have crash dumps, it'll just, you know, pare those down. The best thing that you can do is pare down what software that you have installed.
Yeah.
You know, if you're not using the software, then get rid of it. There's no point in it being there. One thing that I mentioned earlier before is the system restore. So you can. You can look at backups. You can delete previous restore points on the drive. You can disable system restore on the drive if you wanted to, and you can do that by going to system protection, and you can disable that here. You can configure how many or what percentage of your drive that you use for system restore.
Yeah, that's a good one.
You can. Cut down the size of your page file. You can, you know, limit the size of it and don't let it grow infinitely.
Yeah. And if you go into add remove programs, you can sort by how much space apps are taking. So you can always go in there and sort by size and figure out which ones you want to remove. And again, you know, I'm going to pimp my favorite tool, WinDirStat, that will show you graphically what's taking up the most amount of space in your machine. And it seems like every time I run that, I find something. It's like, oh, I didn't realize Flight Sim X was taking up this gigantic section of my hard drive, so you can get rid of those or move it onto a different drive.
Absolutely. Like, for some interesting reason, I've never actually looked at this before, why Silverlight takes up 140 meg, or Link, which is the communicator replacement, takes up 114 meg.
Yeah.
Really should look at the amount of space things take up before products get released. I'm not pointing fingers at anyone in particular, but we should really be more conscious about the space that we take up on drives.
Yeah, and especially, you know, you start moving these modern operating systems to your old PCs because it works well. It takes some, you know, it can take up a lot more space too. So it seems like you run out quicker. I've got a little Sony Vaio thing, and with the slide up screen, and it's just, you know, 20 gig. It's tough to live with that. Begin with.
I mean, with a 32-bit OS, it's a little bit better. With a 64-bit OS, you're going to hit that wall really, really fast.
Yeah.
You can turn on compression on the drive. You know, that may help. But if it's a really slow system, then the perf benefits may not outweigh the gains.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Next question. Why am I unable to delete all partitions on flash drive in Windows 7? I purchased an ADATA C802 8-gig flash drive. Wanted to put some stuff on it, and it has a partition that just won't. It says writing is disabled. To enable writing, remove this partition. And I thought this was interesting because I used to get the U3 drives, and sometimes those would have partitions that you couldn't get rid of. What's the story there? Can you actually get rid of these?
You can and you can't. So through normal operations, it's not really a partition that is writable. So, you know, when you stick in a drive, there's
the flash. Not like you created two partitions on this drive. It's not that kind of thing.
It
can come from firmware?
It can come from firmware, exactly. So it depends on the size of it. You know, they're usually, you know, pretty small, you know, like 16 meg, 32 meg. They're not large partitions. It kind of depends really on the drive manufacturer, why it's there to begin with. It could be one of those USB sticks that emulate a CD-ROM for some strange reason.
And with the U3 drives, I mean, it was to the point that the manufacturer ended up putting out an application where you could format the drive and, you know, gain back all this space. But is there a way to, like, force a thumb drive to get rid of these?
Not without special utilities that come from the manufacturer.
Yeah.
You know, and at that point, it's really more about writing to the firmware to say, don't display this anymore.
Okay, all right, so there you have it. Sometimes you're just better off not, depending on the size of that. All right, next question. Is it possible to find out when my Windows partition has been defragmented? I know Windows uses a defrag program, and sometimes when it goes into an idle state, and they'd like to be able to look and see when the last time that a disk has been fragmented was.
So there's, you know, two methods, right? You can do a manual defrag, in which case I would hope you know when the last time you did a manual defrag.
Yeah.
And as you stated, Windows itself has a scheduled task that will continually, well, not continually, but at certain times will defrag your drive in order to maintain optimal performance.
And where can you see when that runs?
So that's done by the task scheduler. And I've got that happen to be running right now.
You can
now.
Just click start, type task, and break them up.
Yep. Now, you know, where it lives is, you know, you'd think it'd live right here at the main one. No, it doesn't. You'd think it would live in the Microsoft one. No, it doesn't.
Yeah, a little empty there.
Yeah, no, you got to keep going. You have to keep digging into the Windows and then the defrag, and it will actually tell you everything about this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, gives a nice description, and it tells you when it will next run and when it last ran.
Okay.
So it runs in the maintenance hour, and that maintenance hour has a little bit of a sliding scale to it.
Mm-hmm.
But for me, it last ran last week. So it runs the...
Yeah, 12 days ago.
Yeah, so every week, every Wednesday.
Okay, awesome. Okay, next question. I have an XP laptop that I want to create an image of and use in Windows 7 XP mode. Is this a good idea? How do I do it, please?
Now, you'd probably want to just stick with XP mode because that is, you know, fully patched.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to worry about any of the hardware issues. That, you know, you'd be bringing from your old machine.
Yeah.
But there is a tool that you can use, and written by Mark Rusinovich.
Your good friend, Mark Rusinovich. There you have it.
Good friend. Well, we know each other.
Yeah, yeah. He knows who you are.
And he wrote a very cool utility called Disk to VHD.
Yeah.
That will do just this.
And so a question about this. Let's say I've got a laptop that I want to do this with, and the laptop has 50 gig of free space on the drive.
Okay.
When I make an image of that laptop, is it going to bring along all that extra free disk space?
No. What it'll do is it'll just take the image of the drive, you know, with its used disk space.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you boot it into the VM, you can actually give it however much free disk space.
You just make the drive bigger.
Yeah.
Very nice. Okay, awesome. So, yeah, you can definitely do that. Any other drawbacks with that, that the person might not want to do it because of that?
I mean, you're just bringing over whatever potential issues existed on the XP machine.
Yeah.
For something like that, I mean, unless it's software that you can't reinstall because you don't have it anymore, mm-hmm. you know, it's a very particular thing to do with that machine, then, you know, this is a good method.
Mm-hmm.
But otherwise, I just keep the standard XP mode and install whatever I needed onto that machine.
Yeah. Okay. Awesome. Okay. Next question. How can I change Windows 7 so applications launch Thunderbird instead of Outlook?
Okay. That one.
We're doing Thunderbird support now.
Well, we support third-party
applications.
It's kind of our bread and butter. Right on the start menu, default programs. You know, it'll tell you, set your default program. You should have Thunderbird as one of these options. I'm, you know, going to pick on Outlook here.
Mm-hmm.
And then you just can choose what defaults are used for it, you know, the different protocols, the different file types. And, you know, that's basically it.
And email is probably the one you want. So if you click on an email link in a web page, it's going to actually fire up Thunderbolt instead of Thunderbird, I should say.
Yep. Thunderbird itself may have a method inside the application to set defaults, and it should go through the same programmatic interface as this does.
Yeah, cool. Okay. All right, next question. Time since Windows 7 was last unlocked. Is it possible to determine the time since Windows 7 machine was last unlocked?
Indeed it is.
How do you do that?
Using my favorite tool, Event Viewer.
Oh, yeah. I never would have thought you'd say that.
So I had Event Viewer running. It's under Windows Logs and Security.
Mm-hmm.
And what you want to look for are these other log-on, log-off events, 4800. This will tell you, you know...
And 4800 means...
It's just an event ID.
Yeah, so that means you've locked your machine. You hit Windows L.
Yep.
Okay.
And, you know, this is the when the workstation was locked. And then if you go up to when I actually unlocked it, and that's ID 4801.
So you can go in there, you can find out who's logging into your machine. We have some paranoid people.
It's never a bad idea, you know, to take a look at the logs.
If you want to know, you want to know.
Exactly.
Write a little script.
And the security log is really rather cool. You know, you can see when processes were created, sensitive privilege usage, you know, privileged service was called.
Yeah.
You can take a look. This is a great way of auditing your machine.
Yeah.
And just making sure that, you know, if things are acting kind of weird, the only problem with it is unless you know what a good state is, it's very difficult to actually figure out what the bad state is.
Yeah.
So when you've deployed a machine or when you've installed it, what you'll want to do is not install anything for a little while, mm-hmm. right? You know, you can save off some logs, and then you know what your baseline is.
Yeah.
And then after you've installed applications, if you notice, hey, things are kind of going wonky, you can compare your logs and say, well, I've never noticed this before. It only ever happened after I installed this one application. Mm-hmm. It's why I tend to, you know, want to be very careful about what applications you install, how many you do at a time, because, you know, interoperability, some things may not work well with other applications installed. It's much harder to figure out what's going wrong if you don't know what you've done.
Yeah. Okay, awesome. So that brings us to Pick of the Week. And first thing I should say for Pick of the Week is today's the 16th birthday of Windows 95. Happy birthday, Windows 95. I hope we don't cross paths again.
I feel old.
Yeah.
I don't know. It was a great OS when
it
came out.
Awesome for the time, but mm-hmm. I wish my dentist would quit using it. We usually shoot on Mondays, and this Monday we didn't shoot because I came in with a swollen face from coming to the dentist. I was like, dude, what are you doing over there? But
and you haven't walked over there with a Win 7 machine to say replace it?
If he hadn't have messed me up so bad, I probably would have helped him out. But I walked out of there so dazed and confused that, yeah, I didn't prod him on it. So this is from a forum post that I saw this week that I thought was kind of interesting. And it's from the Win Vista Club. And it was someone who had written, all versions of Microsoft Windows include a tool for disk defragmentation. The Windows Disk Defragmenter tool is a limited edition of Disk Keeper program from Disk Keeper Corporation. Disk Keeper does not include the full features available in the full version of Disk Keeper. But I thought this was interesting, but you had even more interesting things about that. That's
yeah.
old news.
Well, it is. I mean, Windows has evolved from using that particular version of Disk Keeper. The way defragmenting works in Vista going forward has significantly changed.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, previous to that, we had a specific license copy of Disk Keeper.
Yeah.
Very low level functionality. You know, there wasn't a lot of the same tricks that the full version can do. But I mean, we don't routinely do things like that.
Yeah.
But in this particular case, you know, Disk Keeper is a very close partner. You know.
Yeah. It's one of the things that it's interesting when you come to work at Microsoft, and it's things that you probably never thought of before, but there's lots of little things that Microsoft has, you know, got partnerships with, and mm-hmm. so there might be like a codec here or something there that other people have dependencies on, and there are things that get included with Windows, and we pay some kind of licensing fee. And
well, think of all, like, display drivers, or I think of it as the critical things to get a machine up and running.
Yeah.
So disk drivers, display, network, you know, all of these things are critical to get the machine up and running.
Mm-hmm.
So you kind of have to have them on the machine, on the DVD, because you can't guarantee network access. And especially if you don't have a NIC or a working network card, you're never going to get
the driver. It's going to be
tough. It's going
to be
really
tough. If that's your only machine, you're going to have a hard time.
I mean, I don't know if you remember, well, I should hope you remember, back in the day when you'd install via floppy disks, Windows,
yeah.
and then the first thing was, you know, hit F6 in order to install your drive controller.
Yeah.
Now, installing on a RAID system, remember way back when, installing on a RAID system, how difficult that was, because you'd have to find the floppy disk, you'd have to create the floppy disk with the RAID controller, put it in, hit F6, load the driver, continue on. I mean, it's a nightmare.
Yeah.
You know, and nowadays it's just throw in the DVD, boot from it, you're done.
It's very kind that you ask if I remember floppies. Like, since I started with punch cards, older than I look. All right, so that's the show for this week. So if you want to send us an email, ask your questions, you can send an email to defragshow@microsoft.com. We'll be happy to help you out. And see you next time.